Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan.
You're watching Consider This, the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Today we mark World Press Freedom Day, a day of particular importance to working journalists like Sharad and I, but also to the wider public, especially those who see a connection between a free press and good governance. So over the next 30 minutes, we're going to be taking stock of how the media has fared over the last year and where it might be headed in the near future. Let's begin with Jahaba Sadiq, the CEO and editor of the Malaysian Insight. Jahaba, good evening. Thank you for joining us tonight. Now, this past year, I mean, it's seen not just a global pandemic, but also the suspension of parliament for us. Now, how much has that affected the media's ability to act as a check and balance to power? And do you think that the media has been able to perform in its role as the fourth estate?
Well, I think the main thing is the pandemic has cut us off from the powers that be in the country because everything is through Zoom or very remote way of reporting. Also, the fact that the government of the day prefers to use official media like Bernama to issue their statements, and also send us statements without any question and answer. I think the Prime Minister attempted one live telecast of a press conference, which seems so choreographed that it was worthy of a drama Minggu Ini and RTM. So, that's what the limits of media is, because you have no access to people in power. The fact that Parliament has been, suspended because of the emergency also means that we have no access to MPs to ask questions in Parliament in an open forum. So we are just dependent on whatever tweet or video or Facebook of live or whatever statement that ministers make, and that's all. I mean, as you can see, that doesn't give us much to go about trying to figure out what's going on with the government of the day, and also it just diminishes a reporter's ability to go and ferret out information in a very personal question and answer session, or to meet their sources to get more of what's going on in Malaysia.
Yeah, Jahaba, it seems that there's been quite a bit of, a reflection on sort of divisions and opposing opinions that we see in the media, especially alternative media, that your organization or Malaysia Kini or a Code Blue have been able to kind of surface. So there seems to be a strange kind of paradox. Despite the kind of official shutdown on open communications, The media seems to thrive, nevertheless.
Well, I wouldn't say thrive. I think the reality is that people are trying to fill up voids in stuff that's going on. A lot of things are actually open to speculation. I got to say that I think we are back at a time when we didn't celebrate May 3rd so openly. I think we are back in the 80s, 90s in many sense. If you look at it, we are a lot more educated. We are a lot more open. We are a lot more media. But it's a paucity of information out there and facts, as it was. You know, I mean, that's why they have anti-vaxxers lording over people through WhatsApp, right?
Right. Jahaba, I want to come back to something you said about not having access to people in power, being dependent on tweets and statements, issuing statements without Q&As. And I wanted to ask you, how much of that has to do with the circumstances we find ourselves in? As you mentioned, the parliament, we don't have parliament open and the global pandemic. But how much of that is due to a lack of accountability in the political culture of Malaysia, that elected representatives, politicians, policymakers, they seem to think that they don't need to address or engage the media and are able to stonewall certain media?
Well, yeah, I guess, that's the majority point of view and the reality, because, as you know, the government of the day did not have the people's mandate. they're not answerable to the people via parliament. So you know, as long as there's an emergency, state of emergency in Malaysia, they can carry on doing what they do because, you know, who are they accountable to? They're only accountable to themselves, to the Prime Minister of the day. And the Prime Minister of the day is keeping this government, you know, barely keeping this government with whatever majority that we don't know because there is no parliament to test it. And I think a majority of Malaysians, if you follow the surveys and polls being done, seem to have resigned themselves to the fact that this government is doing what it can do because it is the government of the day. And as long as the civil service functions, as long as the police force functions at its most basic level, then there are no chaos, there's no riots, then we are fine. We are better than countries like India or anywhere else facing bigger waves of the pandemic.
But we need
to be better than this. We are in the 21st century. We need to be a lot better than this. We can't
because the
powers that be are keeping us here.
To the extent that there isn't much resistance, things seem calm. But if people get increasingly frustrated by these so-called dua darjat, practices, this selective application of laws, and the police increasingly become intolerant of dissenting voices, as you heard over the last couple of weeks, do you think that we are in for more repressive measures?
I think people are frustrated, and there's huge dissent that. I think one pollster dismissed social media dissent as being a drop in the ocean of how they do polls. Will there be more repression? Anyone who's been a journalist for the last, 15, 20, 30, 40 years will say, this is par for the course, right? We are the frogs in slowly boiling water for the last 3-4 decades. So, yeah, I think there'll be a bit more repression going on. More so, I think, for the vernacular press, especially the Malay press, because that's the electorate that keeps governments in power. But I think what will happen is we'll reach a breaking point, but only at the ballot box. You know, I think if you recall the last general elections, the government of the day was slated to win because they had elections on a Wednesday and they had dominance of media and all that. So I think we're coming to that point again. The people are always ready for change. They always want something better. But our politicians haven't changed, not in the last 30, 40 years. They are the only political dinosaurs that can't seem to be wiped out from the face of the earth, right? So I think we'll just continue with this tango for a long time more to come.
Java, thank you for speaking
with
us tonight. Appreciate your time. Let's turn our attention now to independent broadcast journalist and gender activist Tamina Kaosji. She joins us on the line. Tamina, good evening. Thank you for spending time with us tonight. Now, much has been said about Malaysia's drastic drop in press freedom indices, but I'm just wondering what the reality has been for you on the ground. I mean, how much has the situation changed for working journalists like yourself?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Melissa. Thanks, Sharad, for having me on the show. But, you know, definitely the tumble down in press freedom indices was to be expected. But I think when it comes to working journalists, especially the press photographers, the reporters who are going down to the grassroots day in, day out, covering the news of the day, they have not been prioritized for the vaccine rollout. I mean, come on, Indonesia, most immediate neighbor, they actually had 5,500 of their journalists vaccinated back in February. Right. So first and foremost, that is one of the things to consider. Also, we've had about, according to NUJ, the National Union of Journalists, about 400 journalists have lost their jobs in the past year. Their membership has dropped from 1,000 to about 500 as of last month. So plenty of job losses going around. The COVID-19 stimulus and recovery packages also don't adequately, concretely address any of the impact faced by media workers. And I think additionally, of course, when it comes to media's role as the fourth estate, just like Jaba mentioned, just as you all have been speaking, that's been critically affected by the fact that press conferences are still restricted to only state broadcasters. So if you can't actually go out there to get the news and the views that you need to report on without fear or favour, that definitely leaves us in a tricky situation, not even to speak about, you know, the financial or the economic sustainability on a personal side of things. Yeah.
Tamina, do you think there's a gender dimension to this? I mean, are women in the profession disproportionately affected by what's happening?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yes. I will begin with the actual gendered impact of COVID itself. So the gendered cost of reporting while mothering or caregiving during the COVID-19 pandemic, right? So I was actually collating material, Sharad, for IFJ, the International Federation of Journalists, gender and diversity part of the Malaysia country report. And every single journalist who's also a mother pointed out, number one, the lack of childcare support structures. So you combine that with the gendered nature of housework, elderly or convalescent care. So the impacts of the pandemic, working from home, it just means that women journalists, for them, a lot of us, it's actually resulted in stalling career progression, reduced work scope, precariousness of work, basically having to lose full-time employment in exchange for freelancing. So that's just the pandemic itself, right? I'd also like to highlight, of course, the impact of online gender-based violence and hate speech when it comes to being a woman journalist or a woman media worker. We're yet to table even Malaysia's sexual harassment bill, right? So what protections are there for female journalists, particularly those whose DMs are filled with hate speech, with even rape threats, death threats, all sorts of intense, violence, the mental impacts, the emotional impacts. Then, of course, there's also blatant workplace sexism and gender discrimination practiced by both state broadcasters, non-state broadcasters. It sees a lot of, particularly political and economic interviews being by default actually pushed over to male broadcasters or journalists. Just a couple of things happening in this scenario. Yeah.
I mean, all valid points and some that resonate with me particularly as well, Tamina. Thank you for bringing them up. Can I ask you, we're taking advantage of World Press Freedom Day today to kind of raise certain mm-hmm. issues, but what would you like to see, Tamina, in terms of reforms, particularly within the news media industry and within, press freedom? What would you like to see?
I think if I could really... boil it down to just one thing, Melissa, what I would really like to see is that all the reforms and institutional changes necessary to actually culminate in an independent, credible media council that's able to arbitrate media standards, adjudicate public complaints about materials and, newspapers, magazine, online news sites, all of this. We need our code of ethics, our reporting guidelines, no more daily, weekly snafus in how we in the media, first and foremost, cover male violence against women, mental health, suicide, privacy issue, minors, etc. So, I actually feel that the pandemic, the accompanying political instability in Malaysia has actually presented a really golden opportunity for re-evaluating the raison d'etre of media, which is quite simply upholding democracy, promoting accountability, and actually supporting Malaysia and her people's aspirations. But all this is not going to happen in a vacuum, but at the same time, countries with the strongest media institutions and least legislations are the ones who've seen not only better pandemic control, but also better economic recovery. So this is no coincidence. Their systems are functional by designs. Meanwhile, we have our, 34-odd laws and sub-laws impeding press freedom, freedom of expression. So all of that has to be a continuing, work in progress. But I think there's been nothing more positive than the fact that the public has also sort of thrown their weight behind the media. I mean, it was so heartening to see what happened with Malaysia Gini's almost $500,000 ringgit being raised in less than 3-4 hours. If you could put that same sort of spirit into a publicly funded, transparent, accountable Malaysian Media Council, which honestly would actually cost a lot more than that annually, I think we really could be on our way, not just looking at the glass half empty.
Okay, very quickly, Tamina, what can people do, readers, viewers, what can they do for the media?
What they can do for the media, in a word, Sharad, paid subscriptions. Get used to that. Get used to supporting the media so that we're able to keep our views not only independent, but accountable to you and only you, the public, the rakyat. Yep.
Wonderful. Thank
Tamina,
you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for speaking with us tonight. We're going to take a quick break here on Consider This, but more on this topic in just a couple of minutes. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.